Planning a family vacation or a romantic getaway? Why not consider a trip to Skull Island? This lush tropical paradise is perfectly secluded from the chaos of modern life and provides a once-in-a-lifetime chance to see exotic flora and fauna. Skull Island, where there are almost definitely no giant monsters. What? Oh, there are? How many died? Oh, crap. New plan! Why not just check out Kong Skull Island, now on Blu-ray from Warner Brothers? Junkions will remember we raved about this film in one of our patron minisodes, and now you can take it home in high def, with multiple behind-the-scenes features, deleted scenes, director's commentary, and more. You know, come to think of it, watching Kong Skull Island is far better than leaving the house anyway, so, yeah, never mind. Absolutely do not go to Skull Island.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
School's in session. This is Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. You are listening to us on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Welcome to the weekly cult and exploitation filmcast that is so good, it just has to be fattening. I'm your host, Brian Salisbury, joined as per usual by my friend and co-host. He's a novelist, a screenwriter, lieutenant of Megaforce, a man who passed all of his exams the first time he took them, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Hi.
How's it going?
Very well. I'm really excited about this episode.
You've been talking about this movie for a long time.
This movie was the impetus for Summer of 87.
This movie. Not RoboCop.
No.
Not Running Man. Not no. Predator. This movie.
And here's why.
That is interesting to me.
Yeah. No. And I'll tell you why. It's all going to make sense. And it's all going to, all the blanks are going to be filled in because you'll remember all this and it will all fall into place.
Wait, so it's fill in the blank? Because I thought it was multiple choice.
No, this is fill in the blank.
Okay, it's fill in the blank.
So earlier this year, I was invited to go to the Chattanooga Film Festival. And
pardon me, boy. Did you say the Chattanooga Film Fest?
I did. In a wonderful place called Chattanooga, where that, you know, made most famous by that song, which
that song that like four people listening have any idea what we're talking about.
Oh, Chattanooga Choo Choo, are you kidding me?
Pardon me, boy. Is that the Chattanooga Choo Choo?
Yes, track 29.
Everybody knows Chattanooga Choo Choo.
No, Cargill, because our listeners aren't 87 years old.
Pardon me, boy.
Is that the
Chattanooga Choo Choo? Anyhow, I was invited to this film fest, which I had heard for years was awesome. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I've got a weekend. Me and my wife could use a break. Let's go down to Chattanooga and let's go to this film festival. And since I was going, there was a guy down there who was putting on an event where he was going to do a live script reading of Summer School for the 30th anniversary of Summer School. And I was like, that sounds awesome. And the idea was to drink and do a live script reading so that by the end, everybody was sloppy. And if it goes off as a great script reading, it was a complete failure. So I was invited to do that. And in doing so, I was like, I need to sit down and rewatch the movie because I have not watched it in years. But it's part of my DNA. It's just one of those movies that I watched so often when I was a kid and had a touchstone with. And we'll get into that. So in going to rewatch it, I discovered my wife had never seen it. And so I'm like, well, let's sit down and watch this properly. Let's watch this together. And so we sat down and watched it, and I was really taken aback by just how well it held up. And I was like, this movie really is heartfelt. It's great. It does all of these things right. There's a lot of stuff to talk about here. I want to do an episode about it on Junk Food Cinema. And I was like, you know, this came out in the summer of 87, and then I started thinking, and so did RoboCop, and so did Running Man. Let me look up and see what else there is. And I was like, holy shit, we got to do a Summer of 87 like we did Summer of 86. And I mentioned it to you, and I sat down and showed you the list. And we had that same thing that happened with Summer of 86, where I remember one of the first things I said, oh, we got to cover Project X. And you're like, what's Project X? And I'm like, oh, my God, Matthew Broderick and a monkey. Like, I started getting so excited because I'm like, there are so many movies I'm going to introduce you to this summer. There's so many movies I'm going to revisit.
We have such sights to show you.
There's a handful of movies that I'm going to get to discover myself.
Right.
Let's fucking do this. And sure enough, this has been so much fun. And this was the movie that triggered me thinking about, wait, I hadn't even considered Summer of 87 yet. And it was Summer School. And so I was like, no matter what happens this summer, we are fucking covering Summer School.
Freddie Shute loves to cut class, hates to do homework, lives for summer vacation.
Look, Freddie, you're a semi-charming guy and a real snappy dresser. You're just not the kind of guy I date anymore.
Yeah? What kind of guy you date now?
Oh, the kind who wears socks.
And the only reason he hasn't been expelled yet is because he's the gym teacher.
Oh, Mr. Shoup.
At Oceanfront High.
Congratulations. You've been chosen to teach summer school. Oh, I'm not a real teacher. That's all right. These aren't real students. They're unmotivated, irresponsible, not too bright. They'll relate to you.
You in this class too?
Mm-mm. I'm teaching them.
No way!
I've seen some of your students. Very scary.
There's a very valid reason for summer vacation. The human brain needs rest.
I know you guys aren't exactly fired up about English, but we're stuck here.
We're trapped like rats.
Mark Harmon.
You need an intelligent, sensitive man who can skate.
Kirsty Alley.
Do you know such a guy?
Oh, they're hard to find.
In the Oceanfront High Summer School class of 87.
They're as smart as you and me.
You and I.
All of us.
Paramount Pictures presents a new film by Carl Reiner, Summer School.
There's like two or three movies that I was just like, you probably haven't seen them, but you definitely need to have them on your radar. And there's a couple, there's at least one more of them coming up that I am insisting upon that we are going to have to cover. But Summer School is the second. It was Project X. It was Summer School. And then, of course, there is the third film, which you will find out eventually. So you had not seen this yet. What did you think?
I did not realize that last year's Matthew Broderick and a Monkey would be this year's Mark Harmon and a Chainsaw. But that's apparently where we are.
No, you're saying last year. That was earlier this year. That's how long Summer of 87
was going on. Are you fucking serious?
Project X is Summer of 87.
What? I feel like I'm stuck in a goddamn time warp. Like,
we started this like in late April.
We need
and
to
it's
shut
July,
this down. We need to shut this down soon because
it is coming to an end.
I'm running out of bandwidth in my head for the amount of movies, and that's, you know what? I guess that's a testament to Summer of 87.
And you also kind of fucking had a kid in between.
Yeah, I am all over the place. I am not sleeping very much. It is just it's a 24-hour party, and no one should be invited.
So summer school,
I was, interestingly enough, I remember when you and I did a series on Junk Food Cinema called Junk Food Summer School.
Yeah.
Where at one point during a summer, we talked about our favorite kind of
teen movies.
We talked about Sky High. We talked about 10 Things I Hate About You. We talked about Can't Hardly Wait. Last American Virgin. So revisiting a movie called Summer School, I was really interested to see. The only thing I knew about this movie was that it starred Mark Harmon and had a character named Chainsaw. Literally the breadth of my knowledge of the film Summer School.
Oh boy, Chainsaw and Dave, my friend.
Chainsaw and Dave. Why was there not a series? You know, I looked at like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. These movies got short-lived television series.
Oh yeah.
Why was there not a Chainsaw and Dave television series after Summer School came out?
Because in the 1980s, you couldn't necessarily show what Chainsaw and Dave would want to show. Like, the best scenes with Chainsaw and Dave in this movie all involve blood and guts.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And again, I was telling you this before we started recording. I had heard there was a character called Chainsaw. I never knew why he was called Chainsaw. Which turns
and
out
why is he called Chainsaw?
Because he's obsessed with Texas Chainsaw Massacre and is a burgeoning little Rick Baker.
Yes. And that's what's interesting about this film and why this film is such a touchstone. And why when the word went out that Chattanooga was doing this, a whole bunch of horror filmmakers all got very excited and all wanted to be a part of this. In fact, if you had to pick any two people in the horror community right now to play Chainsaw and Dave, who would you cast to do a live script reading of Chainsaw and Dave?
In the horror community right now? Oh, Adam Green and Joe Lynch.
That's exactly who they got.
Oh, look at that.
So Adam Green and Joe Lynch are playing Chainsaw and Dave.
It's crazy because it sounds like we rehearsed this beforehand. We did not.
I did not tell you who played. It was Joe and Adam played Chainsaw and Dave. And the thing is when they sent me the email, they sent it to me with Adam and Joe attached to the email chain. And I was like, hell yes, and I know who I want to play. And within seconds, Joe Lynch pops in and goes, me and Adam are Chainsaw Dave. And they're like, well, of course you are. And I'm like, yeah, of course you guys
dibs,
are.
Dibs.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, of course. So needless to say, it was like, well, you know what? I know they're gonna make me the vice principal and I was gonna play the villain. And I was like, you know what? That's perfect. That's exactly what I need to do. And as it turns out, they had gotten Zach Carlson to play. Those listening might know Zach Carlson. He ran
Terror Tuesday.
He ran Terror Tuesday and did a lot of Alamo programming for a lot of years. And he was going to play Shoop. And as it turns out, he was at the same time as this reading scheduled to host a 4K transfer of a Junk Food Cinema classic, one of our favorites, Hard Times.
Ah, yes.
Across town, so he could not do it. And they're like, Cargill, will you play Shoop?
Walter Hill's first movie.
So yeah. And so I ended up playing Shoop in the reading with Joe Lynch and Adam Green playing Chainsaw Dave. And Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead playing two of the other students as well.
That is something I am terribly sorry that I missed, because that sounds fantastic.
Oh yeah, it was a thing to behold. It was a thing to behold. But anyhow, so there was a lot of horror luminaries up there having a grand old time. I want to say Evan Katz was one of the was up there with us. A lot of people have this movie as a touchstone because of the treatment of Chainsaw and Dave. It was the first time on film that we saw a passion for horror filmmaking that, while comes with a little ostracization, also was seen with a reverence. Like the way they speak about Texas Chainsaw Massacre in this film, the way they admire the craft of prop making and gore effects for horror filmmaking, the way Summer School treats that is with a respect that we had never seen up until this point. You know, the only, you know, our horror nerds were, you know, like Evil Ed in Fright Night, you know, people who are social misfits, like you are as they would say in the 80s, a social retard for having the audacity to not only like horror films, but love them to the extent that you can talk about them like we do on shows like this. And this was the first movie to go, no, you know, that's okay. It's totally an okay thing to do. And your parents don't get it, but you will find people that do get it. And you totally see like where a Rick Baker would come out of Chainsaw or Dave.
Yeah. And if you're not familiar with Summer School, the basic plot here is that Mark Harmon plays Freddie Shoop. And right now,
Shoop.
A lot of you are thinking, Mark Harmon, how do I know that? Why my grandmother loves him. Why? Because of, was it NCIS?
Yeah.
That's kind of his big claim to fame right now.
In the modern era, he's, you know, got one of those big procedural shows. The thing is that he was a, you know, an 80s comedy guy. Like, he was that good looking, you know, funny, you know, comedian that you got for comedies like Summer School in the 80s.
And in Summer School, he plays a gym teacher who, right at the end of school, of the end of the school year, the teacher who is supposed to play or is supposed to teach Summer School to the remedial English class wins the lottery and says, go fuck yourself, and bounces out.
A teacher played by the director of this film. I think this is important to mention, but when we talk about how good a film this is, when we talk about this reverently, there's a fucking reason for it. Who directed this film, Brian?
The biggest surprise for me, finding out that Carl Reiner directed this movie.
This is a Carl Reiner movie.
Carl Reiner, who a lot of you might know as Saul from the Ocean's 11 movies, was in and of himself a very successful filmmaker who
a comedian with Mel Brooks.
Yeah, and crazy enough. He was the 1,000-year-old man.
2,000-year-old man.
2,000-year-old man, kind of Abbott's his Costello. Where I knew him from before the Ocean's movies, again, we talked about this in the last episode, how I'm a 65-year-old man inside. He played Alan Brady on The Dick Van Dyke Show. And The Dick Van Dyke Show was about Dick Van Dyke being a comedy writer on a television show called The Alan Brady Show. And every once in a while, they would feature the star of the show within the show, played by Carl Reiner. So he's somebody I have a lot of affection for and has, like I said, himself become a successful director. He directed The Jerk, one of the like preeminent Steve Martin comedies. On top of that, directed, I think a lot of people have affection for the movie Summer Rental. He also directed, The Man with Two Brains and All of Me, another, like Steve Martin and Carl Reiner kind of were the way Steven Soderbergh is now with some of his go-to actors, just simpatico and worked together really well.
Which makes me wonder if he wanted Steve Martin for this movie.
Actually, you know who I feel like was initially intended for this movie was Bill Murray. This feels like a Bill Murray role.
Yeah.
Where of the guy who's just like completely checked out, totally sardonic.
He's a fuck up.
He's a fuck up. Exactly.
He's a gym teacher because he's a guy who liked having his summers off and wanted the job that came with the least responsibility possible. And he's this guy who loves sitting on the beach, getting a tan, and fucking every pretty girl that walks by. Like, that is who he is.
A good time to mention that the tagline of this film was, at Oceanfront High, what do they call a guy who cuts classes, hates homework, and lives for summer vacations? Teacher.
And so when Carl Reiner bugs out, the vice principal, our sleazeball...
Our Dean Wormer of this particular film.
Yeah, runs around desperately trying to get someone to cover summer school English, and everybody sees him coming and ducks out, and Shoop is the guy that doesn't get out of the way fast enough. And Shoop is up for tenure, and back when we used to give teachers tenure.
Yeah, I remember I was watching this, and my fiance, they mentioned tenure at the end of the movie, and she goes, a high school teacher gets tenure? And I was like, there's a character called Chainsaw. Like, you kind of have to throw the rules out the window at this point.
Yeah, and from that point on, what happens is we get the fuck-up teacher with a fuck-up class, and he figures out rather quickly that the way to get these kids to pass and save his job is to help them out with their personal problems and each get them something, help them on their way. And what the film then becomes is this touching film about a teacher learning to teach and students learning to learn, all while dealing with their own radically different teenage problems that are all treated, almost all of them are treated very seriously and interestingly.
Yeah.
Like there's the goofy one where you've got the girl who can't drive. She's a terrible driver. And will you give me driving lessons? And then you've got the guy who's constantly asleep in class. And that's a little over the top.
Until you find out why. And the girl who can't drive. Yes, she can't drive. The more interesting thing about her character, she also is majorly dyslexic and didn't know it.
And that's the type of stuff that this film handles really, really well.
And it's part of a grand tradition in cinema of this subgenre of unconventional teachers, unconventional students, an unconventional teacher who is against their will kind of tasked with teaching a group of outcasts. I mean, like, actually the movie this reminded me of the most, and you'll probably laugh at this, was Renaissance Man with Danny DeVito.
Oh, why would I laugh at that? That's exactly what this is.
Because that's like, a movie nobody fucking talks about anymore.
No, that was built up the exact same model because all these kids are misfits. All these kids have failed their basic high school exams and need to pass an exam to move on to the next grade. And we'll get into how that goes down, because how that goes down is also really interesting. Like, this movie, as much as it is a zany 80s comedy, is kind of grounded and it has a big heart. And really, by the end of the movie, you really give a shit about these kids. But the gags in this movie are also really funny, and it's all character work.
Well, it's deceptive because initially it's presented as boilerplate boner comedy.
Yes.
And that's what you that's where you think this movie is going. Even as it's operating sort of in the vein of something like, and I know that these movies came after Summer School, but something like Renaissance Man or a Dead Poets Society or even Meatballs, I think, would be an appropriate kind of
this
analog.
Is more of a Meatballs, yeah.
Because you think, and then all of the sort of horny,
which is, I guess, where you're seeing Bill Murray, because that is very much, yeah, it is very much akin. It is very much akin to Bill Murray in Meatballs without all the rapey sexual harassment.
Truth, yes.
There's a reason we will never talk about Meatballs on this podcast. If you love Meatballs, don't revisit it.
Are you ready for the summer?
It is such a wonderful movie with about 5 minutes of really painful, awkward sexual harassment that really does not fly in 2017, where you're like, oh, fuck, Bill Murray, no, that's your employee. What the fuck? Why are you chasing her around the office, slapping her ass and giggling? Oh, my God, Donald Trump, go away. Bad touch.
You know, I never was at that camp. It was a tremendous camp. I was never there. No, I agree with you. And I think that is kind of where you think this movie is going. That's the adolescence of the humor initially.
But it's not a boner jam.
But that's not what it is. In fact, about three quarters of the way through this movie, it hit me. I haven't seen a single tit.
No, in fact, they make a joke about it too.
Yes,
they do. There's a great joke where the foreign exchange student goes and they're at the beach and she's about to take off her top, and Chainsaw and Dave are about to bust right there on the fucking beach. And then one of the girls goes, damn, what are you doing? This ain't the French Riviera. And she's like, oh, I'm very sorry. And they're like, oh, denied. And it's like, because it's not that kind of movie, my friend.
By the way, that actress who plays the foreign exchange student, it was driving me crazy. Where have I seen her before? She plays a lot of vagina in the first Austin Powers movie.
Yeah, she does.
And I was like, oh, okay. And she is fucking gorgeous. Absolutely. There's a couple moments like that in this movie. The girl who is pregnant in this movie.
Oh, yes.
Did you recognize her?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. She's Shay...
Shawnee Smith,
which you will know from, we'll eventually get to it, The Blob. Also, she's the girl who's got the fake ring in Armageddon. She was a big crush of mine in the 80s. So, yes, I know Shawnee Smith very well.
I'm surprised you didn't mention the biggest thing that I think most people would know her from. She's Amanda in the Saw movies.
Yes, she is.
Which is crazy because I didn't think it was possible, because she looks like maybe 2 years older in the Saw movies than she does in this. And that was fucking crazy to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, she's still in her early 20s in the Saw movies, almost 20 years after Summer School. How is that possible?
Because that's the magic of Shawnee Smith.
That is the magic of Shawnee Smith. And, absolutely.
Well, I mean, for me, that was her later work, you know, as opposed to, you know, her 80s stuff, which is where, you know, she made my heart go pat-pat.
Oh, no, absolutely.
As a teenage boy, yeah. It's a really solid cast. I mean, like, when you talk in terms of cast, Kirstie Alley, of course, is in this.
She is so adorable in this movie. Like, it is, I completely understand why the late 80s fell in love with Kirstie Alley.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Holy crap.
And no, and she's a total ball buster in this fucking movie. Like, she's not she can read Shoop like a book.
Yes.
And that's kind of what's great about it. But she ends up falling for Shoop. Why? Because as we learn through this film, Shoop is actually a really good guy who just needs to learn responsibility from his students. And so he ultimately ends up learning a lot of responsibility and becomes an incredibly responsible person by the end of the movie, which is just fucking great.
And she's initially dating the snooty, and this is where this movie gets premierly boilerplate, and I love it. She's dating the snooty vice principal, And as soon as you find that out, you're like, yeah, not for long. Yeah, they're, you're going to end up with Shoop. Come on. We can see that coming from a mile away.
We keep saying Studio Vice Principal. We're talking about Robin Thomas.
Yes.
Who you have seen in tons of stuff. He is, you know, has been around forever. I mean, you know him from Pacific Rim, from The Contender. He's done a ton of TV. He's just, you see him and you're like, oh, that guy. Yeah. And he is so great as the snooty vice principal here.
They're always trying to get Shoop kicked out, always trying to get Shoop fired, doesn't think he's a real educator, which is, at the beginning of the movie, Shoop's like, no, I'm not a real teacher. That's why I teach gym class. Like, yeah. What are you doing?
Courtney Thorne Smith. My God. Again, a girl who broke so many hearts in the 80s, playing the surfer girl who feels a spiritual connection to Shoop and falls in love with him. And her favor that she asks of him is, hey, I need a place to crash. Can I sleep on your couch? And he's like, yeah, you can sleep on my couch for a few days. And then she starts turning it into a domestic situation and making it weird. And what I love about this movie is they make it weird. And Shoop is like not having it.
Yeah, because it is weird. And the movie acknowledges that it's weird.
And that's just, and really what that boils down to is, you know, we've talked about this a lot recently, but this is something we are seeing in this era of filmmaking is the sincerity of this movie. Like, you go in thinking you're going to watch a boner jam, and instead you get this very sincere comedy that makes you care for these characters, which is why I feel like 30 years later, all of these filmmaker friends of mine all have this, they feel the resonance of this movie. Like, they, you know, the way it treated and respected all of these kids and the way we saw ourselves in Chainsaw and Dave, all of a sudden we feel like this movie is respecting us. And that is really something special.
And I want to mention one other thing about casting. There's a character in this movie who is a guy with a very high-pitched voice named Larry. And it was driving me crazy because I had never seen Larry before. I got the distinct impression I had never seen Larry before. But I knew that I knew that voice.
Oh, yeah.
And it was driving me crazy. And then I realized this actor who plays Larry his name is Ken Olant. And if you were a child of the 90s, you are very familiar with his work. Because he is the voice of, among others, Alpha 5 from the Power Rangers, Invader Zim, and Norbert from the Angry Beavers. Like, this guy was completely inextricable from children's television in the early 90s as you could possibly be. So if you watch this movie and you hear that voice and you're like, something's familiar, pick any one of the number of jobs that he had providing voices in the 90s in children's fare, and you'll pretty much have it. But yeah, you're right. There is there is an attempt by this movie, and I think it succeeds in the long run, of taking these characters that it builds up an expectation in you of being just completely one note, ridiculous. I love the scene early in this movie where Chainsaw steals Mark Harmon's car keys, and he says, you know, where are my car keys? And Chainsaw's just like, they're somewhere in this room. We will tell you when you're hot and you're cold. Because it reminded me of my very brief tenure. No, that's the wrong word to use. My very brief stint as a substitute teacher, because you reach a point with students where they realize that they can fuck with you and there's nothing you can do about it. And it is the most frustrating, disheartening thing you could possibly go through when you have the slightest thought that that might be what you want to do for a living. And that scene just reminded me of that. It was like, Mark Harmon can't scream at these kids. He can't like force these kids to give him back his keys. And you're like, well, that's who these kids are. They're just going to be douchebags throughout the whole movie. They're going to be very one note. And then slowly this movie kind of parcels out all of the kind of deeper levels of these students and what's going on in their lives. And I think one of the most interesting ones is actually the kid who sleeps in every class. The kid that they can never, like, and they make jokes about it during the montages, because it is an 80s movie. We will have plenty of montages. Some
oh, yes.
Great montages.
There will be montages.
You gotta have a montage.
Even Rocky had a montage.
Even in the montages, he's like sleeping on the beach. But when we find out why he's so tired all the time, it's at first really kind of like in your face and crazy, but then you kind of start to feel for the guy at the same time. So I think you're right. That happens all throughout the movie.
Yeah. Also, there's two other things I want to definitely note. First of all, there's a really super great gag in this movie that I absolutely love, in which one of the guys gets up to go to the bathroom on the first day of class, takes this big, unusually large hall pass, and then shows back up for the test.
Yes.
And then does very well on the test. He insists at the beginning that there's been a mistake. He doesn't belong in this class. He goes to the bathroom. He then just comes back at the end for the test, which is a great gag. That guy I mentioned earlier this summer, he was the car attendant in The Hidden. That when, you know, the guy, when the alien goes to steal the car, he's the car attendant, the big burly car attendant. The other thing I wanted to mention is there is a character cut out of this movie. This was something that melted my brain after 30 years. When I was in Chattanooga, what they did is they actually got the original shooting draft for us to read.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, I haven't heard
this. So we did it based upon the shooting draft. So there were differences compared to what, you know, the original script was and what made it into the film. There's another kid in this movie, and you can see him in a couple of shots, but they completely cut him out of the movie. Scuzzy Guy is what he's called. He gets one line early on, like along with everybody else, and then you completely forget he was ever fucking there. Like, he just vanishes from the movie. They cut around him after that. He's literally sitting in, like, I think the second row, and you catch him in a couple of shots, and you're like, wait, there's another guy there. And and then he's just gone for the rest of the movie. And it's kind of fucking amazing. And so I don't know if when they'd made the decision to cut him, but they were already shooting while he was there, and they don't get rid of him in a normal way. And throughout the script, he has other lines. He's just the sleazy guy in class who's called Scuzzy Guy in the script. So he ended up getting completely truncated from the film, and you could catch him in a couple of shots, and you'll be like, wait, there is another member of this class. And then he's gone. Like that. It's Kaiser fucking Soze.
This movie has a Kaiser Soze. That's fucking incredible. I, you know, crazy enough, there was one scene in this movie that I had seen before. And it's something that I saw very young and stuck in my head for years.
Is it the scene where they freak out the teacher?
Yes, it is.
This is the infamous scene from this movie that everyone remembers about this movie.
And it was basically what happens is Mark Harmon is suspended because he takes this class on field trips to amusement parks and to the beach and to a petting zoo and this was funny enough, my first inclination that maybe this was from this movie is that during the scene at the petting zoo, Chainsaw and Dave come running out with fake rabbits attached to their face. Like the rabbits are like eating their face and they're screaming, and it causes the foreign exchange student like put a rabbit down. She's freaked out. And I remember thinking that when they pull the rabbits away from their faces, the claw marks on their faces reminded me a lot of Griffin Dunn's makeup from An American Werewolf in London. I was like, something about the way those scratches look on their face, it reminds me of the slowly decaying Griffin Dunn from American Werewolf in London. And funny enough, later in the movie, they give a book report, or I guess a report on the person they admire the most, and they're talking about Rick Baker. And they're not just talking about Rick Baker. They are talking about Rick Baker accurately, because they talk about the fact that he won the very first special effects Oscar for American Werewolf in London. And immediately I was like, okay, this movie's doing something more, like you said, grounded, more intentional, and more sincere than what I thought it was doing. But that all leads to this moment where, because Mark Harmon is suspended, they're trying to, the snooty vice principal is trying to bring in somebody else to finish out the summer school course, and they decide that they're going to fuck with the new teacher. So when she walks in, she walks into a grisly goddamn scene of like people having like pencils through an eyeball dangling out of the socket, and you know, limbs cut off, and
people hanging.
Yeah, just like this really like gruesome, nasty. Like, it almost doesn't fit with the rest of the movie because it feels more like it's something out of Student Bodies.
Yeah.
Or something. Something kind of a slasher comedy. And you're just like, what the fuck? And then you kind of, and then when Chainsaw and Dave, this is my favorite part. When Chainsaw and Dave come in with their fake chainsaws and say, like, we're psychopaths. If you look at Chainsaw's performance, he has nailed Gunnar Hansen.
Oh, yeah.
From that, from the end of that first Texas Chainsaw where he's doing that weird dance with the, he's fucking, like, right down to the most basic of movements that Gunnar Hansen did. I was like, holy shit. They did their homework for this movie.
Yeah. And they even show a scene for, they show the ending of Texas Chainsaw in this movie.
Which has one of my favorite lines, because the snooty vice principal comes in and is like, what in the hell are you watching? And Mark Harmon says, oh, it's a new film strip, Safety with Power Tools. And I'm like, yep, I would totally, man, if I were a teacher, I would find a way to show Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and that'd be a great way to do it. Oh, it's Safety with Power Tools. I thought that was brilliant. I really made me laugh out loud.
But yeah, this is, and I really feel like that's why this movie works as well as it does. Like, it's just, it's one of those movies that it feels like it should be so slight, and it's not. Like, it really delivers. It's rewatchable. The jokes play. The characters, these kids are so well developed, and the movie loves them.
Yeah.
They're not punchlines. Even the ones you would think are punchlines aren't. The jock becomes this sweet guy who's just in love with this girl who's pregnant. And, you know, the guy who's tired, as we find out, is stripping at night, like to make money, but really because he's a hornball and loves meeting women and loves being, you know, ogled over by women. The movie really defines everybody through their wish and ultimately through what they really need. Like, that's also the other thing, is this movie is very subtle about that. Like, everybody actually needs something different than what they're asking for.
Yeah.
And that's the magic of this movie. You get the character who's like, I need to learn how to drive, and really she needs help with her dyslexia. And Chainsaw and Dave need want to have parties and want to show movies in class, but really what they need is they need a girl who understands them and who accepts them for their passions. And this movie is just always, you know, always doing that. And then we get to the end, and the end is what really fascinates me about this movie.
And I want to, as we're getting to the end, one thing I want to mention about the ending, and we're talking about, we at the top of the show talked about Junk Food Summer School that we did, you know, last year, year before, and we talked about Last American Virgin. There is a kind of over-the-top ridiculousness to one of the more dramatic elements of Last American Virgin, because you have a film that for 45, 50 minutes is a boner jam and then deals with abortion. And that feels so left field because of the tone established by the rest of the movie. You have a similarly heavy theme in this film with the character played by Shailene Smith, who is pregnant in the movie. She gives the baby up for adoption. That's a super heavy, like, you know, social issue and something that you can really, like, it's very dramatic meat to play with. But the way it's announced and the way it's presented and where we are in the film at that point, your heart goes out to her, and it feels like a warm hug the way the rest of the class responds to that, because they're all just very, very supportive, and you realize it was the right decision, and it doesn't feel out of left field.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I feel like Golan and Globus were going for. It was the feeling they were trying to capture at the end of Last American Virgin that doesn't quite get pulled off because of how scandalous the rest of the movie is, whereas this movie, there's nary a nipple to be found.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a boner jam. It's not going for cheap laughs. It's giving you people who...
It's a really funny after-school special.
Yes, it really is. It really kind of is that. And I think it works on a level you don't expect.
Yeah.
Which, that's the thing that comes out of left field, is that you are feeling stuff, and it is well-earned, and you didn't think that was going to be the case.
So, Mark Harmon has spent this entire movie teaching these kids English, which is not his degree in any way, shape, or form. Teaches these kids, they take their test, and most of them fail.
Well, and it's important to set up that there is a bargain struck up by this snooty vice principal, Mark Harmon, that if he manages to get all these kids to pass, then they will forgive the fact that he has not only taken them on questionable field trips, but at one point in the movie gotten arrested for contributing to the delinquency of a minor because he takes the rap for Chainsaw and Dave having alcohol. So basically, he won't be fired if all of these kids pass this test.
So he needs all of them to pass.
So it becomes a lot of study montages and really trying to commit to... And you watch these characters go, and it's just like, oh, just like the template of every other movie like this. You watch this character go, these characters go from completely apathetic to realizing that somebody believes in them, rallying behind that person, and getting invested in themselves as a result.
And then they fail.
And they fail. And that is the fucking brilliance of this movie.
Yeah. It's what really, like, you're just like, oh shit, most of them failed.
Or did they?
Well, and that's the thing, is that because their scores then improved so much from previously, you know, the principal ultimately, who's clearly tired of the vice principal's bullshit.
Oh my God.
Like, he's clearly fucking tired of his bullshit. Is like, nope, that's learning to me. You know, and so everybody wins and loses at the same time.
Yeah, it's very much like the Friday Night Lights ending, where you're like, you're pulling for these kids to win so hard, and then they don't.
Why do we have to bring up Friday Night Lights? You know that's a sore spot.
Well, yeah. But you're crushed, but at the same time, you realize what everybody took away from that experience and how it bettered them. And
Friday Night Lights is bullshit. I couldn't get away without saying it.
All right. Calm down. I'm sorry I brought up a sore subject.
You really did.
Woo.
One of these days, we'll do an episode on Friday Night Lights and why it is totally bullshit.
Man, look at these worms that are all over the floor I let out of the can. Yeah. But the whole thing is that they failed because the collective score was below passing. But when he starts looking at the individual scores, it's like, you went from a 35 to a 64, like, and starts seeing all this marked improvement, and some of them actually did get passing grades.
Yes.
And you know, they're very proud of that fact. And you see, and this is what's great, and this is the, oh, captain, my captain moment of the movie, is when all the parents start coming in and speaking on Shoop's behalf and talking about the fact that it's like, we didn't think our kids could do anything right, and you have inspired them, and they're invested in their futures, and they're studying, and we kind of can't believe the transformation. So the fact, and I feel like this is a fucking prescient knock against standardized testing. It's like, yeah, maybe they didn't get the score that they were going for, but it's clear that they are learning, and they are making more of an effort, and they have improved. So for us, that's a win. And every parent across the board echoes that sentiment.
Yeah.
And that's why it still feels like a victory. And that's why you have this principal character, principal absentee, because he's not in the rest of the movie.
Not in the rest of the fucking movie.
And this is the part that I thought was fucking hilarious. And this is why no one will ever be able to really top 80s magic. Is in any other movie, it'd be like, okay, you're not fired. We'll give you a chance to come back and teach gym class. And hey, why don't you teach summer school again? No, he gets fucking tenure. Like, they skip right past we're not firing you to you have tenure now, which is, again, not even a thing I think they extend to high school teachers. But he not only is not getting fired, you're here pretty much for life now. Good job.
Way to go, Shoop.
Way to go, Shoop.
Shoop.
And then, of course, Kirstie Alley is fed up with the vice principal's bullshit, so she breaks up with him, and there's this whole running gag throughout the movie. She won't say yes to a date. And then, of course, we have to talk about the other star of this movie, Wonder Mutt.
Wonder Mutt is awesome and heartbreaking when Wonder Mutt loses his toy.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I was reminded, funny enough, I was reminded watching this movie of a scene from Superman Returns that always bothered me. There's a scene where Clark Kent goes back to the family farm in Kansas, and it's Brandon Routh, and he's just there, and he's contemplating shit, and he's walking around outside, and his dog comes up and wants to play with him, and he picks up the dog's tennis ball and just fucking Kal-El chucks it into the next county, and the dog runs out about 30 feet and just stops and is like, dude, and it just never gets that ball back. And I'm like, what a dick move. You know your strength.
What a dick move, Brandon Routh.
What are you, a Zack Snyder Superman? Like, stop being an asshole. And so for me, it was like there should have been a moment at the end of Superman Returns where when he's flying around the fucking world, he finds a tennis ball and brings it back to the dog. Because there's a moment in this movie where throughout the movie, Wonder Mutt, who's Mark Harmon's dog, is obsessed with this chew toy that's just the head of a Dapper Dan doll.
Yeah.
Which was new to me. I didn't know what the fuck that was. But then when this happens, where Mark Harmon at a low point throws it in like a go fetch motion, but it ends up in the ocean and the dog can't get it back. And the dog's super depressed. Mark Harmon actually buys a new Dapper Dan doll and cuts the head off of it and tries to offer that to Wonder Mutt. But Wonder Mutt's just not having it.
Because it's not his toy.
It's not his toy. So there's a great moment of like victory at the end of this film. A great setup and payoff where, you know, he's making out with Kirstie Alley on the beach. They have their From Here to Eternity moment where the waves are rushing up around them. And which, by the way, apparently the whole, I don't know if you knew this, the Hawaiian shirt that Mark Harmon's wearing in this movie is the same one worn in From Here to Eternity.
I did not know that.
So it's like an extra gag at the end of the movie that they're kind of having their From Here to Eternity moment. But as soon as it's happening, I'm like, oh boy, they're in the water. There's Wonder Mutt. And sure enough, here up comes- on the beach, washes the head of Dapper Dan. Wonder Mutt is so happy. Everybody gets their, like, even the fucking dog gets a moment in this film. That is so sincere and wonderful and heartwarming, and I was over the moon, because also one of my favorite gags in this movie involved Wonder Mutt when they're throwing the big party at Mark Harmon's house, and Dave decides to set off a Roman candle, but he lights it and then throws it out, and Wonder Mutt's like, oh, fetch, okay, cool.
And he brings it back.
And brings it back in and sets it on the couch and walks away, and then sets the couch on fire, which, by the way, there's a point in this movie where if you look at Dan Harmon, he's got like...
Dan Harmon?
What did I say?
You said Dan Harmon.
Sorry,
Mark Harmon.
If you look at Dan Harmon, he's just fucking throwing a fucking fit about Chevy Chase, who's not even in the movie. His hand is all bandaged up because he apparently actually put that fire out on the couch with his bare hands and got injured on the set of this film, because the whole fucking couch goes up in flames in the middle of this party. And it's one of the, I think, the funnier moments in the film, because the dog's just like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll go get that. And then hilarity ensues. But yes, even the dog gets a fucking moment, gets a fucking payoff.
Yeah.
This movie's great.
I'm so glad you dug the shit out of it, because it's one that I've carried around for a long time, and revisiting it earlier this year made me so happy. And I'm like, I can't wait to watch this again, and I can't wait to talk about it on Junk Food Cinema. And that led to this summer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also, Junk Food Cinema related, one thing I found out during my research is the school where they filmed this was also the school where they filmed The Karate Kid. Which feels very...
I'll take things that don't surprise me for $200, Alex. That is clearly the same fucking school.
It is clearly the same fucking school. And I feel like that is that's a very appropriate connection to make with this movie. But yeah, also, one thing we haven't mentioned, which is hilarious, we got 45 minutes of this episode before we brought this up. Who did the score for this movie? Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
Danny Elfman did the fucking score for this movie. Very early Danny Elfman. This is like just past his first collaboration with Tim Burton. So like this is very early on in Danny Elfman even knowing what doing film scores is.
Yeah, the thing about it though, Danny Elfman did it. It's not one of his memorable scores.
No, because it's mostly soundtrack based.
Yeah.
And hilariously, the song at the end of the movie when they're taking the test was sang by E.G. Daly. Who I think a lot of us, she's in a bunch of fucking movies, including Pee-wee's Big Adventure, including Streets of Fire. She is most well known, I think, as the voice of Tommy Pickles on the Rugrats and other kind of voice acting gigs. But she's singing the song at the end of this movie, and she and Danny Elfman have worked together in the past. So it's just kind of interesting that that how all that shook out. But you're right. This is more of a soundtrack than it is a score. So it's not one you're ever going to really remember Danny Elfman for. I also have a question. How do you become president of Cool Dude Incorporated? Because I really want that job.
He literally just proclaimed himself president of Cool Dude Incorporated.
There's a subplot in this movie where Chainsaw has been writing complaint letters to a sunglass company called Cool Dude. And what results of that is that they get a big box of complimentary sunglasses from Cool Dude. Some of them look like Kanye glasses today. Some of them look like...
Oh, no, they clearly... Like, Kanye borrowed from this very small... Like, the Kanye glasses come from a very small window in the 80s where that was actually, like, a cool thing for a hot minute and then was uncool, and he brought them back. Mm-hmm. That was the thing you saw for literally, like, 5 minutes in the mid-80s and then gone. Yeah. Yeah, but that's how they teach the kids how to letter writing and persuasive writing is through writing letters to things, and cool dude sent sunglasses.
Well, it's funny because there is another part of this movie that was cut out where they do it again with hair products. And if you notice, I mistakenly said Larry was the name of this character. I was wrong. The character is Alan Ikian, played by Richard Stephen Horvitz, who is the voice of Alpha 5 and Norbert and Invader Zim. And in the movie, if you notice, his hairstyle keeps changing throughout the movie. And the whole joke was that he's using the hair products they got from the complaint letters, but that was cut out. So what we're just seeing is his hairstyle change randomly throughout the movie, which I thought was pretty funny. And it speaks to another plot point that was cut out. Before we get into the junk food pairing, I do research for this movie. I use the IMDb a lot for trivia and just kind of look at, you know, connections to other people that have done this or that. Every once in a while, I come across the fact, and I'm reminded of the fact, that IMDb trivia is written by anyone.
Anyone.
And sometimes those people, you know, you hope that it's curated to the fact that we're just not spouting things that are wholly untrue. But every once in a while, it dawns on me that trivia could be written by people who English is not their first language.
Yes.
So I want to read you possibly the most incoherent piece of trivia that I have ever come across.
Let's do it.
IMDb. And it goes like this. First big starring role in a cinema movie in an exclusive U.S. Hollywood production for actress Kirstie Alley. I'm going to read that again. First big starring role in a cinema movie in an exclusive U.S. Hollywood production for actress Kirstie Alley. First of all, a cinema movie? I don't know what the difference is between a cinema movie and just movie or cinema. And then, was Kirstie Alley in a non-exclusively U.S. Hollywood? Is there a Hollywood? Okay, so many questions I have. Is there a Hollywood outside of the U.S. that is making movies? And was Kirstie Alley involved with that Hollywood non-exclusively? I'm so confused by the way this
is. And this is not anywhere near Kirstie Alley's first movie.
No, not at all.
Like, it's not like, it's not like, oh, wow, This is her first movie, and this is just trying to say that. No, this isn't even close. Like, Wrath of Khan has this beat by 5 years, and I'm pretty certain that's not her first movie.
Here's the thing I need to address is this not her first? You're right. She was in Wrath of Khan, but is this her first cinema movie? Is this her first cinema movie as opposed to just her first movie? Because I still don't quite know what that distinction means.
I love this film. It had passion, a plucky spirit.
Dave, I agree with you. Thumbs up from me.
Same here.
To sum it up, I'm Jansa.
I'm Dave.
We'll see you at the movies.
And that brings us to the junk food pairing. I have to say, embarrassment of riches when it came to picking a junk food pairing for this.
But there's really only one way to go. But let's see how you fuck it up first, and then I'll correct you.
See, but that's the thing, is I don't feel like there's one way to go, because all throughout this movie, people are eating fucking and name-dropping junk food all over this movie. There is everything from Pop-Tarts to donuts to a big bucket of Dreyer's ice cream. But the one that I went with, because it's mentioned in the movie, and it's something that I had only just found out existed.
Oh, my.
Is the chocodile. Do you know what a chocodile is? Because I didn't know what a chocodile was. Kirstie Alley mentions it during the movie in a conversation with Mark Harmon. Because throughout this movie, he's fucking eating junk food left and right.
Oh, yes.
Constantly. And she says something to the effect of, I'll stick to the chocodile. So I had to research. A chocodile is a chocolate-covered Twinkie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I remember those.
I didn't know that was a thing.
God, much I like forgot this movie, that was a thing.
I didn't know this movie was a thing until we did this series. Well,
yeah, but how is anybody supposed to find a chocodile?
You have to. Just find them. Like, make it happen. I want to taste the chocodile. It's a chocolate-covered Twinkie. Make it happen, folks. All right. So I've said mine. So give me yours.
Dude, peanut butter right out of the jar.
Yeah.
Like, that I mean, is awesome. Really, if you're going to eat any junk food while watching this movie, you got to do peanut butter out of the jar, maybe a jar of a jelly with it so you can double dip. And if you have a Wonder Mutt of your own, like I do here with Gossamer, you share it with them.
Nice. I like that. I like that very much. So that is Summer School. By the way, we were starting to get I don't want to say angry, but very insistent tweets from Mr. Joe Lynch asking us when the hell we were going to cover Summer School. So, Joe, you got your wish, my friend.
Here's Summer School for you, Joe Lynch.
Here it is.
Excellent, excellent job as Francis, my man. Francis.
Danny Elfman doing the music for that movie as well. Don't call me Francis. My name is Chainsaw. So Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at Twitter, at Massaworm, M-A-S-S-A-W-I-R-M, on Facebook, facebook.com/Massaworm. You can also find me on the road this summer. You can find me in Honolulu at the end of July at Honolulu Comic Con. You can find us together 2 weeks in a row, Partners in Crime, here first week of August in Austin, Texas at Armadillo Con.
Talking Prince of Darkness.
And then you can find us the following week in Omaha for our triple feature action packed live junk food extravaganza. And then you can find me at Dragon Con this year as a guest. And of course, September 5th, Sea of Rust, my new book comes out. It's junky as hell, guys. It is... It's 30 years after the robots have wiped us out, and now they've got their own beasts with each other. So I hope you pick that up. I hope you pre-order it, and I hope you like it.
You know what those robots are? They're a real bite in the ass. Those robots are a real bite in the ass. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. You can follow us on Twitter at JunkFoodCinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/JunkFoodCinema. If you really like the podcast and you want to keep us out of summer school, and I mean, you won't because we're going to be here all year long, but go to patreon.com/JunkFoodCinema. For as little as $4 a month, you get access to all of our bonus content. We do mailbags. We do Junk Food Alamodes. The Summer of 77, which is a special episode for George Romero and Martin Landau. So there's a lot of content there for you to discover. You will also get the episodes early and ad-free. That's another benefit of being a patron. So look into that if you haven't already. And then, as Cargill said, we're going to be here in Austin. We're going to be in Omaha. We got a lot of stuff going on. So jump on that bandwagon as soon as possible. But for now, I'm going to leave you reminding you that what Junk Food Cinema is isn't just an irony-free celebration of the best of cult cinema. It is also a festival of screw-ups, and we are their kings.